Welcome everybody to another episode of The Damage Report. I can feel Brett looking at me out of the corner of my eye. It's Friday, which is normally a good day, but it's also 2019, so they sort of cancel each other out. Brett, welcome back to the show.
Good to have you here. Brett, good to be here. Everyone watched the happy half hour today. Daniel Francese from Mean Girls, he played Damien, he's on the show. We talk about all kinds of stuff. John, you're gonna lose your gourd.
Off of what?
Oh God, we have this. We have the behind the scenes on that one video where the robot fights back. I don't remember what we shot because I drank some Red Bull vodkas.
That's
the
show.
It had already been a long day, so I did two shots of Red Bull of vodka before I started the show. So it's all kind of a blur.
I envy you for developing a show concept that when it comes on, you get to watch it as fresh as any other person.
Should have come up.
That's good.
Should have come up with the concept before I was too old to drink this much.
Exactly, and do anything the next day. But it is the next day. It's also the next day of news. So I'm gonna give you a brief idea of what we're gonna be talking about. Hey, we almost went to war, almost. So we're gonna talk about that. And then Fox News, are they for a war? Against a war? Tough trivia today on the Damage Report. Also some Democratic responses. We've got a horrendous legal argument in court by the Trump administration on what they consider humane conditions for migrants being held in detention. And then a new garbage person, Laura Ingraham. But why? We'll show you that at the end of the show.
But not just that. If you tune into TYT programming all day on our live stream, you'll be able to participate in the Aspiration Telethon. If enough people sign up for an Aspiration account, aspiration.com/TYT. This here is proof that we have it. This is a bunch of grapes. This is because we're doing an all-day telethon, we have grapes. aspiration.com/TYT, lots of stunts. Watch throughout the day, sign up. It's a pretty achievable goal.
I have to assume that was planned because he had the grapes. But what twisted mind? Anyway, it's a great financial institution that can take money out of companies that are using it for bad, basically, advocating for dirty energy, all of that, and move it into environmentally and socially conscious. You're still eating grapes. You know what? Tune in. It's going to be going on. I'm actually going to be hosting the first hour of it with Brooke as well. So it should be a lot of fun. Maybe not as much fun as live eating a fruit, but we're going to do our job.
Grapes aren't allowed food. It's not like I'm Doritoing over here.
It wasn't the noise that threw me off.
All right, sorry. Anyway. People eat, John.
Okay.
But I'll be hosting the last hour of the show, which features a dunk tank. So that is from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific time.
Okay.
It's 9 to 6 p.m. the next day.
That's awesome. We should probably get started because this is obviously going to be the last time you appear on the show. Anyway, okay. Did you know that we almost went to war yesterday? And when I say that, I mean that Donald Trump, he authorized a strike on Iran and then changed his mind. So that's good that we live in that sort of political situation. President Trump approved military strikes against Iran in retaliation for downing an American surveillance drone, but pulled back from launching them on Thursday night after a day of escalating tensions. Planes were in the air and ships were in position, but no missiles had been fired when word came to stand down. So I want to delve into that language just a little bit. So that's the New York Times. They know what they're doing, right? They're journalists, I'm not. He approved it in retaliation for downing an American surveillance drone. I always love how retaliation and causality is referred to in the media, where it would be retaliation for downing the drone. And we will go no further back in history than that. They did that, and so now we're acting. That was not caused by another thing that was caused by another thing that was caused by another thing. And after a day of escalating tensions, but that's such a passive statement. He was escalating tensions. His administration were escalating tensions. On Twitter, in interviews, they were doing it. It wasn't just like they're in a cloud of escalating tensions. They're like, what should we do?
There's a lot happening here. That's like a microcosm of the world, right? So first of all, the Trump's flightiness and fickle-headedness plays out all over the place. And here it played out in people in planes. Going, I'm gonna go bomb someone. Never mind, I'm not gonna go bomb someone. The raising and lowering of tensions, this is the same kind of approach it seemed that he had when he was one day calling Kim Jong-un Rocket Man, and the next day he's my best friend. And I like stability. I like being stable, but if the person in charge of the country is unstable, we're gonna get stuff like this that is itself so wildly unstable. And it's not just with this. Today in Missouri, for a few hours, there were not gonna be any abortion clinics open in the entire state. Mm-hmm. For a few hours. Mm-hmm. And then a judge came in and was like, not so fast. But that's how I feel about everything right now.
It's so contingent.
It's so contingent on whims and strange things, but it informs you two things. One, the person in charge is flighty and ridiculous. And the other thing is how close we are to these drastic, terrifying changes that affect so many people that the power to make those changes is in the hands of people who've been spending decades to wrest it away from the concept of democracy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's an important point. Like, we will, I think, rightly focus on the fact that Donald Trump's whim is apparently day by day guiding things. So he authorizes a strike and then he turns it back. He wanted to overthrow the government of Venezuela and then apparently got bored with it. That was news yesterday as well, I think on Business Insider. But that does not mean that it is just whim. I mean, after all, Donald Trump put John Bolton in a position to get us closer to war. Trump pulled out, not pulled out. He violated the terms of the, he violated the terms of the treaty that we had with Iran, the nuclear treaty. He has been demonizing them for literally years. So his whim decided what happened last night. But that is not the only data point that we have to care about. And that's the sort of thing that should be included in analysis like this. But I do want to read just a couple of the tweets that he sent out on why he changed his mind. He said, on Monday, they shot down an unmanned drone flying in international waters. That is disputed. We were cocked and loaded to retaliate last night on three different sites when I asked, how many will die? 150 people, sir, was the answer from a general. This is literally the script that he's going to be reading from at a rally soon. 10 minutes before the strike, I stopped it. Not proportionate to shooting down an unmanned drone. I am in no hurry. Our military is rebuilt, new, and ready to go. By far the best in the world. Sanctions are biting and more added last night. Iran can never have nuclear weapons, not against the USA, not against the world. That's why he pulled out of a treaty that was stopping them from having them.
This dude should not have nuclear weapons, especially because it wasn't until the planes were on the way to do this thing that he asked the question, so are we gonna kill anybody?
Yes. Yes, what did you think was, like, what I have to imagine was a day of meetings about this. Mm-hmm. Never brought up the possibility that somebody could die. What did he think they were bombing?
I have no idea.
A swimming pool?
And no one's gonna have any remote idea about any of this.
Yeah.
It's so incredibly frustrating.
And here's the thing, like, so it's great that our fickle, petulant child of a president decided to not start a war that he had decided earlier in the day to start. That's great. But I'm not gonna pretend that we're going back to some sort of status quo where we're not closer today than we were a day or a week ago to war with Iran and all that comes with that, literally for potentially decades, for tens of thousands of people, hundreds of billions of dollars, all that stuff. We are still very much in a horrendous situation. And the sort of person who waits until literally the last second to figure out what the consequences of his actions will be is still determining those actions in the future. We could be launching attacks right now as we're broadcasting this. Would you really be shocked to find out that that was going on?
And what is this all for, man? Like, we're so detached, and it's similar to when we went into Iraq. It's like, what were we doing? Mm-hmm. Because I kind of had the feeling that we were avenging 9/11, but that's not what ended up happening. That was not what it was related to whatsoever. Yeah. In the meantime, I would just like to say this. How's it going, Trump? Seems to be going really great because in the meantime, in your quest to do something I'm not sure of, we have only ensured that Iran has the green light to further enrich uranium outside the bounds of a deal. And, well, I guess what's the little conciliatory measure? Gas prices went up.
Yeah.
So up yours, dude.
And how horrendous that we pulled out of a treaty that was effectively making it inconvenient to start a war with them because they could not do the things we now say we don't want them to do, but really want them to do because that would justify a war. Really fast, just to end on a little bit of a positive note. So Donald Trump says, let's do this, let's bomb this place, let's kill these people. And then he says, oh wait, people will die, let's not do it. You would have to be a real moron to credit him for saving those lives. And it's America, so we've got them. Bill Mitchell tweeted, President Trump was ready to strike three Iranian targets last night. He was informed this would cost 150 Iranian lives and called off the attack because one drone was not worth 150 lives. That's leadership. Paul Joseph Watson, one of the conspiracy theorists, said Trump decided to save hundreds of lives rather than act superficially tough.
Which is exactly what he did.
He decided to strike them in the first place. He didn't jump in front of a bullet at the last second, he pulled the trigger. But we live in absolutely stupid times, and so people will do ridiculous gymnastics to try to give credit to a man who authorized the death of hundreds of people. And then decide, oh wait, maybe not, maybe tomorrow, maybe the weekend, maybe next week, we'll see. Let's see how my polling goes next week and then we'll find out. But for now, there are people who consider themselves serious thinkers who are giving him credit for saving hundreds of lives. Which before the show, we were talking about how not enough people get credit for putting a knife to a person's throat and then not slitting it. That person's a hero, they saved a life.
But the way to push this is, okay, you're less safe because of this. And we were almost in a war.
Yeah.
And it's more expensive to fill up your gas tank. But literally what happened yesterday is he decided I'm not gonna go through with this. And as a result, the stock market rallied. So once again, the only benefit is for people with giant stock portfolios.
Yeah.
Because what? The price of gas went up, and then yeah, that's the kind of commodities they own.
It doesn't benefit me.
At least there's not a, yeah, chances. Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back though, responses from Fox News. What do they want to happen in regard to Iran after this?
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Yesterday, Donald Trump authorized a strike on Iran and then at the last minute changed his mind. But don't get comfortable, because today he's gonna go back to doing what he does, which is watching nonstop Fox News. And after taking a look at last night's coverage on Fox News of the situation with Iran, we are very close to launching a second strike. Take a look at a couple of these videos. We're gonna start with Greg Gutfeld, who has an absolutely insane analogy to video games for why we should not fear war with Iran.
This is now just a video game. And I think that's good news. We're now in a time where it doesn't matter how large your population is, because the population is no longer expendable in war. It's now about the machines that you have. Drones are now replacing bones,
oh.
Jesse. Yes, I like to do rhyming there.
Point.
So it'll be stuff versus stuff. And fortunately for us, we have the best stuff. And if we have the stuff up there, doesn't matter what they have down there. We control them if we have a sky of drones. So then how do you retaliate, right? How do you retaliate to something that isn't human? Like, you know, they took $160 million worth of machinery from us. We have to do that, which means either hitting some parts of their navy or refineries or whatever. You find that you retaliate with machines. But I think it's good news, because I think we are moving away from hurling bodies at bodies. That's a good, that's good.
Can I disagree slightly?
No, you can't.
That's a great end there. I'm gonna take a sort of a cue from him. How do you respond to something that's not human, like that commentary?
We've been fighting in Afghanistan for 18 years. We have a lot more machines and video game equipment than they do. We're still in Afghanistan.
So it's not as simple as playing Halo?
Oh, it is as simple as playing Halo. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's an idiot.
Yes.
No, it's not simple, it's not easy. And the most frustrating thing is, like, that show it's him and Waters are like both on it.
I think it was Dan Perino too there.
Well, I'm just talking about the morons. Like Waters and Gutfeld are like they should have one of, they should have none of them. But you can't have both of those out of your five.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that was horrendously immoral.
It just doesn't make any sense.
First of all, it's stupid. Okay, it's not like we, as you point out, we've been in Afghanistan. We've been fighting in so many different countries. How simple and video gamey have any of those conflicts been?
The frequency with which he looks back down at his paper underscores, in case it wasn't noticeable, how little he knows about what he's talking about.
Well, I do. He did describe his preferred military response would be, we'll bomb a ship or a refinery or whatever.
Are there whatevers there? Whatever. Do they still use whatevers?
It doesn't, but it doesn't matter.
Or have they
moved
on to thingamajigs?
When you don't care. So he said, we've moved past the time of throwing bodies at bodies to a time when, I'm gonna read a little bit into him, where we're throwing weapons bought at high prices from military contractors, which is awesome because they benefit, at people that we don't consider to be human. That's how conflict is supposed to go in the future from the point of view of a Fox News host.
Right, and that would be super convenient. Mm-hmm. If that was the case,
yeah.
It's just not, because these are human beings defending their homes.
Yeah. So look, that's the five. I'm not sure that Donald Trump actually watches the five, but there are shows that he does watch, and they too are pushing for war. We're gonna move now to Sean Hannity. Understand that Geraldo makes more sense than he's contractually allowed to make on this segment, but Sean Hannity incredibly clear about what he wants to happen, and understand he frequently talks to Donald Trump on the phone before they both go to bed.
Geraldo, they shot an American drone out of the air. They're not getting away with it.
Well, Sean, if indeed the drone was over Iranian airspace, then it's not a question of getting away with it. It's a question of self-defense.
Wait a minute. The president was very clear. We pinpointed the exact location.
It's the truth. Let's see their proof. Let's see their proof. Let the international community see their proof.
Let them see our response.
Truth matters here. Facts matter. We should not rush into another disastrous military conflict. How many times do we have to go down this road? How many American lives have to be lost for nothing?
You didn't listen to my monologue.
I did 12 combat assignments nearby in Iraq, 12 others in Afghanistan. I've seen the suffering of our GIs in combat. At least let's prove that they were in the wrong.
Geraldo, I never said boots on the ground. I said just the opposite. And this president was clear. He does not want these foreign entanglements where young Americans, like 58,000 dead in Vietnam, and all these kids that died, they didn't even have up-armored Humvees in Iraq in the early days, door to door. Those days are over, because Washington can't fight a war without politicizing it. But if you shoot an American missile or drone out of the air, and you attack tankers in the Straits of Hormuz, you're gonna get the living crap bombed out of you.
So he makes references there to how the situation in Iraq was so mismanaged. I don't remember who it was that started that war, but I have to assume it was someone that Sean Hannity didn't support. Literally every night, and support that war, by the way.
So again, I just want to say that I said this earlier in the show, but we are at a point where this is the end of a decades long fight for them to get to a certain point, and now they're just playing around with the victory. Mm-hmm. So in this situation, you can't fight a war without politicizing it. He totally can. He is operating, all of his potential to declare war is operating outside of how the Constitution they so revere sets up the ability for the president to declare war. He can just do it willy-nilly. And what do you mean without politicizing it? Ideally, you have Congress who can vote on whether or not that they're behind it. So war should at least in some way be influenced by how people in America would respond to it. Mm-hmm. I know that they've gerrymandered it quite a bit so that you can see stat after stat that says that within states, the representation in Congress is different from the breakdown of the votes by a percentage.
Mm-hmm. I think that you're overthinking this. I think when he says without politicizing it, he means that the rules of engagement are too humane, too moral. I think that's what he's referencing in Vietnam. They weren't allowed to do whatever they wanted with no concern for civilian lives. I think that's what they mean by the politicizing.
The idea of war in Iran is so insanely unpopular that the only people who are advocating for it are like Bolton and Hannity.
Yeah. And most Republicans don't even want it.
Right, and that's the thing is
he does, but he doesn't listen to popular opinion. He listens to Sean Hannity. He listens to Fox and Friends.
So
this is the messaging Trump is getting right now.
You spend time getting people to believe you, and then you tell them things to believe. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So essentially, people like Hannity, Tucker, Trump, they all said things to get folks behind them. Mm-hmm. And then they all make this turn, like Hannity is saying, which is like, we gotta go kick their buns. Yeah. We gotta go do it. But that kind of thought process is not what made this current president popular. What made this president popular is a sentiment saying, we gotta get out of these wars. Mm-hmm. This is stupid. Bring the people home. Everything that everyone before us ever did was dumb. Yeah. And what they did before this was send us into wars that are still happening.
I agree. Although I think, as unpopular as it is, even amongst Republicans, if Donald Trump was to do it, I think his base would like it.
But Trump's
we have a couple other guests we gotta get to. So Brian Kilmeade, this is how Trump starts every morning, said, I think by not doing something, he is doing something. There are consequences for non-action, and there's consequences for action. In the Middle East, a non-action is looked at in many cases as weakness. So when Donald Trump turned on TV from bed, ate a cold Filet-O-Fish, and turned on that program, what he heard was, I am weak. I am a weak person for not striking them yesterday. Even for Brian Kilmeade, a guy who doesn't seem yet to be 100% sold on war. And so that is the beginning of how he'll start his day. The rest of his day will be war, war, war. We have to retaliate. They shot down a remote controlled plane. By the way, Fox and Friends brought on a guest, Joey Jones, a guy who says at some point in this segment, we shouldn't go to war. But he also said, listen, I deployed to Afghanistan. I deployed to Iraq. I don't want to see anyone deploy. I think if Iran provoked us to that point, it would be a pretty quick and easy war. I really do believe that. Where have we heard that before? A quick and easy war with Iran, a country four times larger than Iraq with a far, far larger military.
You have a million people in it.
A million people in their military. And all Fox News is saying to Trump is, it's like playing Xbox. It's super simple. We send B-52s and cruise missiles. We bomb them to hell. And then there's probably no consequences. Nothing bad happens after that. That's the end of the whole thing. That's what he's being told, and he is stupid and gullible enough to believe it.
So what everyone needs to do is appeal to Trump's desire to get reelected over his desire to seem like a tough guy.
Yeah.
And what's frustrating, yeah, everyone was flailing. Kilmeade went on the outnumbered right after his morning show and was saying these exact things. Like, isn't it great how he was kind of convincing people that he was gonna do it and then he didn't do it? I think that was the whole plan all along. No, if it was, that was stupid. Mm-hmm. And B, no, it wasn't.
It might have been. It was definitely stupid. Yeah. Okay, we do have to take a break. We come back, guests gonna join us to break down a situation of another environmental contamination issue with some huge environmental justice issues after this. Corporate profits over people's health. That's a topic we return to quite often on this program. And today we've got another instance of it, this time in Port Arthur, Texas. And joining us to break it down is Hilton Kelly, founder and director of Community and Power and Development Association. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on. So Port Arthur, Texas has this massive oil refinery. What's going on with that?
Well, we have a number of oil refineries here in the city of Port Arthur, and every year our communities are subject to thousands and thousands of pounds of toxins like sulfur dioxide, 1,3-butadiene, which are known carcinogens, and various other toxic chemicals that come from the oil and gas industries.
And we can expect that that is going to have an effect on people's lives, people who are living in that area. And I want to bring up a photo of a house right next to one of these plants. If we could bring up this, you can see it right there. And I believe, so that family's been displaced for a couple of years because of toxic mold, but that's just one of the health concerns that we're talking about. There are ongoing lawsuits. What are some of these lawsuits about? What are the families in the area alleging has happened to them?
Well, basically, due to Hurricane Harvey, many of our citizens have been displaced. I think about maybe 20% of our population Wow. is still living in Louisiana, places like Dallas, other than here in their hometown of Port Arthur, because their homes was inundated with water. And to add insult to injury, a lot of toxins were spewed into the air due to shutdown of these facilities whenever they flood. There was some flooding at the Motiva facility. There was some flooding at, I believe, the Valero facility. All of them had to shut down because that's just the way the procedure goes when you can't operate the units. And because of that, you get a lot of sulfur dioxide in the air. You get a lot of carbon monoxide. And it's just the way of life here in Port Arthur. Many people live right up on the fence line of these massive oil and gas industries.
Yeah, that footage is incredible. I had seen pictures, but even up until just right now, I just realized how big this facility actually is. And you know, with that size comes massive profit. So how big is this business? How significant is its economic sort of footprint?
Well, these industries are critically important to the economic survival of this country, really, because they provide a lot of the fuel that we use in our jets, that we use in our tanks, for military, for our cars, you name it. Southeast Texas helped to provide that energy need, oil and gas. And also we have LNG facilities here as well. And yet, you know, the people down here in Southeast Texas, we bear the brunt for the nation to have clean burning gasoline and fuel. But unfortunately, a lot of those toxins are dumped into the air that we breathe.
Yeah, and so I've read, by the way, that last year, that company made $111 billion in profit, almost twice as much as Apple, which it sounds insane. So you've gotten some pushback for your advocacy work in that community, because there's theoretically in the future an economic benefit to some of the people who own real estate in the area, is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, you know, many of the people here, most of the jobs that are paying a decent wage is in the oil and gas industry. And many of the folks here aspire to work in that particular field because they pay an upwards of $25 to $30 an hour. Any other job in this particular area, you're probably making $12 to maybe $13 an hour, if that.
And so tell me.
So would that be? Our founding fathers here in the city of Port Arthur put all their eggs in that one basket.
And now, I mean, we nationally, there's this conversation about switching to more clean energy that would hypothetically lead to plants like that being shut down, which, you know, there's obviously a lot of benefits to that. But it sounds like some of the people in the area would see that as a potential threat to their economic future.
That is correct. Many of the people here that aspire to work in the oil and gas industries to make an upward of $25, $30 an hour would see that as a threat. But we all know that, you know, nothing lasts forever. And I think we need to explore ways in which we can get more into renewable energy and also make it accessible and affordable for everyone, not just the wealthy.
So as you continue your advocacy work in Port Arthur, as those lawsuits continue against this corporation, what do you see as the ideal outcome?
Well, I think the ideal outcome at this particular time, due to the fact that many people cannot afford renewable energy sources like battery operated cars and solar panels, I think the best thing that we can push for at this particular time is to get the refineries and the chemical plants to reduce their emissions to a safe level, to what the EPA deemed as safe, even though sometimes that's still not conducive for everyone in the community. But we got to continue to push to reduce as much of the emissions from these industries as possible.
And of course, it's timely. We have to mention that I believe just in the past week, the Trump administration repealed the Clean Power Plan and have their own version now, which is less stringent in terms of its regulations on exactly this sort of energy production. So the path that you'd like to see us go forward on, the Trump administration is taking us in the exact opposite direction, it looks like.
And that's exactly right. I mean, we have to do more to increase the regulations to help protect human health and our environment. But under the Trump administration, it appears as if he's trying to roll back everything that Barack Obama has done and President Clinton did in Executive Order 12898, I believe it was, where they made it more safer because they pushed the Environmental Protection Agency to do a better job at enforcing the regulations and the laws that govern them under the Clean Air Act rules.
Well, Hilton Kelly, we appreciate you joining us on the show, talking about your work and about the situation down there in Port Arthur.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're gonna take a short break here. We come back, legal action about the condition that migrants are being held in at the border, and the government's fairly insane argument about what they think should be allowed after this. Government lawyers are in court this week arguing that conditions for migrants that are of almost cartoon levels of cruelty are perfectly fine and should be allowed to continue. The Trump administration argued in front of a Ninth Circuit panel Tuesday that the government is not required to give soap or toothbrushes to children apprehended at the US-Mexico border and can have them sleep on concrete floors in frigid, overcrowded cells despite a settlement agreement that requires detainees be kept in quote safe and sanitary facilities. They argued that, and we have a couple of responses from both the lawyers, but also some of the judges on that panel, which gives me a little bit of hope. US Circuit Judge Marsha Berzon said, "You're really going to stand up and tell us that being able to sleep isn't a question of safe and sanitary conditions?" So that's a rational person. US Circuit Judge William Fletcher said, "Are you arguing seriously that you do not read the agreement, the previously agreed one that we were talking about, as requiring you to do anything other than what I just described? Cold all night long, lights on all night long, sleeping on concrete, and you've got an aluminum foil blanket. I find that inconceivable that the government would say that that is safe and sanitary." But that is what that Sarah Fabian has apparently been making the case that that is in fact totally acceptable.
Okay, they're not illegals, so you can't treat them like it's a criminal. Mm-hmm. These are people who are, and it's legal to apply for asylum and seek that. It is so ridiculous. I just think as a whole, when you look at the issues that are happening and when it comes to these immigrants, it's just like, if the president were sitting across the table from himself on an episode of The Apprentice, where the project in question was immigration, the president himself would look at him and be like, I don't care who's responsible. If you're pointing your fingers at other people, you're in charge here. So you're fired. Yeah. That is how every episode of The Apprentice played out. It was kind of fun to watch.
But I have never watched an episode.
It was just that. It was him just messing with people who messed up. And when they messed up, he would just be like, I'm sorry. I know you're saying that the products didn't show up on time. Or like, you don't have the toothbrushes or the soap. Figure it out. Get the toothbrushes and the soap. You're the one who's messing this up. You're fired.
Yeah. And because he's messing it up, other people have to say crazy things. And I don't know the Justice Department's lawyer, Sarah Fabian. Maybe she agrees with every part of this policy. But she has to defend it, whether she agrees or not. And so she had said she thought it was fair to say that those things like being able to sleep and having soap may be part of the definition of safe and sanitary. So that's good. Maybe that helps her to sleep. But she is in court arguing that the policy that they have right now, where you can't sleep, you don't have a toothbrush, you don't have soap, is perfectly fine and should continue. So let's give you a little bit more details about the conditions that these people are being held in. US District Judge Dolly G said, that they had found that migrants in Rio Grande Valley facilities were hungry, with some eating only sandwiches of two pieces of dry bread and one slice of ham. They were thirsty, with up to 20 migrants sharing the same cup to drink from the water cooler. They were embarrassed to use a toilet in front of 50 other people, and they couldn't take a shower or brush their teeth or even wash their hands with soap and dry them with a towel. At night, they couldn't sleep. The lights were left on as they shivered beneath an aluminum blanket on the concrete floor. That is like literally the list of things that Jesus asks you to do, is to provide those things almost in the same order he asks you to provide them. And we are, as a government policy, denying people those things. Not because we don't have the resources. We definitely have the resources. However much that military operation we almost launched on Iran yesterday cost would certainly buy a lot of toothbrushes and soap. But we're choosing not to do it. And we know that it's Donald Trump and it's Stephen Miller. The choosing is based on wanting to create cruel and inhumane conditions to scare other people away from ever coming to the United States.
So first off, it's not working. They know that this is they face. And that logic, the only thing to do if they are fleeing certain death in their country is to promise them certain death in this country. That's the only way that your incentive structure that they set out for themselves would pan out. That's illegal. Yeah. So why don't you find some other solution than torturing kids?
That's their go-to. And in terms of the death toll so far, just since September, 6 child migrants have died, mostly after falling ill at detention facilities in that same valley. And if you've wondered how you can fall ill at these places and die, I think that we've sketched out a pretty good path as to how you get that. And so basically the sum total of all of this, everything that we've learned today fills me with rage. And the only appropriate place to target that rage is at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for daring to call these concentration camps, with a gall of her
how dare she
to identify these places where they don't even have soap as a concentration camp. Anyway, American politics is something. Let's turn back to Iran for just a second. I want to give you the Democratic response there. We almost had a war with Iran yesterday. We came this close, and here is how some Democrats have responded to this horrendous situation. Someone, a reporter, caught Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in a hallway, and here was her brief response.
Do you have any concerns about the handling of Iran right now?
Yeah, I think they're trying to goad us into a military conflict that's completely irresponsible.
So that's video from The Hill there. Good. And when she says they, there was some people didn't understand. She means the Trump administration. She does not mean Iran. And so she said that. She followed it up with a tweet clarifying, saying this administration needs to put down its saber and pick up a phone. Diplomacy is what grants us peace and stability, not war. I disagree slightly. Donald Trump already has his phone in his hand, but it's for tweeting, not for calls to pursue diplomatic outcomes.
Yeah, well, here's what's happening. Mike Pompeo and John Bolton want a war. Trump wants to look very tough. Mm-hmm. They somehow, John Bolton is the symbol of tough.
Yeah.
With his silly mustache that looks kind of like a fry guy. He looks like a fry guy from McDonald's. But Trump, who himself looks ridiculous, wants to seem tough. And at the same time, he wants to get reelected. Mm-hmm. And seeming tough might jeopardize his ability to get reelected. But the worst part is, he's so stupid, he didn't see this as a trap he's gonna walk right into.
Yeah.
And so now we have to deal with it. And he does have a lot of pieces on the board, a lot of state media types and Fox News who right now today are trying to find ways to justify this as a really smart three-dimensional chess move, when really it was just plain stupid. Did you hear what he said? He's like, this wasn't a drone with like people on it. Mm-hmm. Like, you mean a plane?
Mm-hmm. That's just a plane, actually. A drone is actually a new development of plane. The planes came before it.
The reason I stopped attacking is because I found out it would hurt people.
You know what would be tough and far cheaper? Take a tiny fraction, 5% of whatever we'll spend on a war with Iran that will last perhaps for the rest of our lives. We'll see. And like I said a week or two ago, go into Flint, strip out every single pipe that has lead in it, clean all of the soil that has lead in it, take down all the paint that has lead in it, and be tough against the people that are poisoning American citizens. Don't bomb strangers in another country, spending far, far more money and killing tons of people along the way.
John, you're pitching it all wrong. Mm-hmm. You need to say the Iranians have gone in overnight and put in lead pipes in Flint, Michigan. And they're trying to poison us.
Our water?
There are water. The pipes are invading our good water, our clean, clear water.
I think our drone was shot down by lead pipes.
Yes, so we have only one recourse,
John. So I want to give credit to a couple of other people. Bernie Sanders tweeted, it's easy for politicians to pound the table and talk about how tough they are, but it will not be the kids of billionaires who get killed in a war with Iran. It will be working class kids. We must work to solve this crisis with Iran diplomatically, not go to war. And that sort of gets to what I tweeted something earlier today about this. Sean Hannity desperately wants to attack Iran, and he's a guy that trains with MMA fighters all the time because he's a tough guy. Well, don't just waste it in the gym, don't waste it in the rec room. Go to Iran and fight them if you want a war so badly, Sean Hannity.
Dude, what crisis with Iran?
The crisis that Donald Trump has chosen to begin.
It's all manufactured.
It's as manufactured as any conflict.
It was like a couple tankers that's happened before. Mm-hmm. He himself is minimizing it now, but like they're talking about this crisis with Iran. 2 months ago, what crisis? Mm-hmm. What was it? How has anything changed other than we've started to give grainy footage to people?
I want to give just a little bit more credit. Ilhan Omar said, just as in Iraq, aggressors are using illegitimate pretexts to beat the drums of war. Just as in Iraq, our media is taking these claims at face value. Just as in Iraq, children will die, American lives will be lost, and the world will be less safe. Hashtag no war with Iran. All these people that I've been talking about so far, though, are not Democratic leadership. And so we turn now to leadership. Nancy Pelosi saying Americans have, quote, no appetite for war with Iran, which is something, I guess.
She's like, I'm not hungry.
It wasn't like stop feeding me
human bodies. I'm just not hungry is why I don't want to.
We shouldn't not go to war with Iran because the public opinion isn't there. We should convince people that war with Iran is fundamentally immoral, stupid, wasteful, evil. We don't just follow the polls. We determine where they go, especially if we're in the leadership of one of the two parties that runs American politics. I looked at a poll and let's not get stuck in a quagmire in Iran for a couple decades, I guess. What if the numbers change then? Are you gonna support it if it goes to 51%?
There is no grassroots effort. There is no banner. Mm-hmm. She has a D, but she has no banner.
Yeah.
There's no mantle she has taken up and advocated for. That's what's missing. And there are many candidates who are doing that right now in the race.
Yeah. Hopefully, they will continue. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, garbage people.
There was an argument sometime, I think it was the 1980s, there was a quote, "You won, we lost, that's that."
And so that's Laura Ingraham, and she's making the case there that the imperialists won. Not just any imperialist, Western imperialists, American and European, white imperialists won. And so we get to keep whatever we had. So no, there's not gonna be any reparations or anything like that. And for making this argument, which we're gonna play the full video for you in just a second, she gets added to our log of garbage people. I don't know if Laura Ingraham has actually been a garbage person before. I choose not to watch her show. If I did, we'd probably have this thing on the table for every episode. But she is the worst. And Media Matters has done a great job of keeping track of the horrendous things that she's said. And they produced a mashup on Twitter. Let's bring up this graphic. I saw this today. Laura Ingraham ranting about reparations sounds a lot like white supremacist Richard Spencer, which that's inflammatory rhetoric to say that they're so similar. Well, let's play the little mashup that they produced of those two individuals.
That the whole world has been reshaped by people taking other people's land. I mean, it's called conquest.
We conquered this continent.
I mean, as Trump always says, you don't get do-overs. No do-overs. That's it. And it was a, you know, there was an argument sometime, I think it was the 1980s. There was a quote, "You won, we lost, that's that."
Whether it's nice to say that or not, we won. And we got to define what America means. We got to define what this continent means.
Like around describing world politics. We won, you lost, that's that. That's just what it is.
America, at the end of the day, belongs to white men.
So they're both awful. Richard Spencer's already wadded up in the bottom of this thing. But for what she said, for arguing that we should never correct any of the historic wrongs that we as a people or as a country have done, have perpetrated on a group, she gets added as a garbage person.
Bye, low. Bye, Lolo.
What do you think? Am I being too hard on her?
No. The one you very quite accurately compared to a self-avowed white supremacist.
Well, that's Media Matters.
But Media Matters
did a great job.
They did a great job, and we endorse that message. First of all, if this has to do with reparations, two things. One, it seems unclear that she knows who won the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Because the slavers lost.
Yes.
And then also, this is just stupid. It's, you can say that we, whoever created America, right? You can say that it's white men, but they also wrote down like the governing laws for what's fair. Mm-hmm. At the time, they just didn't really say, oh, we're being terrible with slavery, that they were. But if you look at like the laws they laid out, it says that like, we have a tort system, by the way, where it's like, if you did something bad to someone and they are owed damages, you pay them damages. Mm-hmm. That is the framework set up originally, that spirit by our framers that you say are white men, but in that framework is a way to pay restitution to people whom you've wronged.
Exactly.
So let's go by that. Okay, fine, whatever you say. The conquest idea is really, really stupid. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where to start with that.
And again, like, she thinks that no one living today, because no one living today personally lived as a slave, they're not owed anything, but she believes that anything that a descendant of someone who conquered something gets is totally cool. So she gets the genealogy thing to some extent, conveniently in her own favor. The entire thing is insane.
But like, I can rob you. By that logic, I can rob someone and be like, I took it from you.
You won.
It's mine
now. I lost.
Like, I can take this trash can.
No,
and now, no. Conquest, white supremacy.
In the future,
nope, I have
you're going to end up in there.
Thanks,
whites.
That's
what's going to happen. You and your grapes. Thanks, whites. Jesus. Look. The individual argument that she's making there is absurd, awful, immoral, all of that. The bigger issue and why she's in there and is gonna stay in there for a long time is this is not the first time that she has echoed the talking points of white supremacists. That is what her show is. That is all that it is slightly cleaning up white nationalist, white supremacist arguments and presenting them to a far larger audience. That's who she is, and it's a choice that she made. Brett, thank you as always for joining us on the show and stealing my garbage can. Appreciate
it. John. What a great time I had.
Watch our telethon. It's going to be live later on in the day. Thanks for watching all week, by the way. Next week's a big one. We got the two debates. We'll be breaking it down for you next week. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.